Chicago. The flight from London to Chicago was by rocket plane, of course. 45 minutes from liftoff to touchdown. Yet as he sat in the softly yielding recliner chair and watched the atmosphere's thin layer of blue hugging the curved horizon, Jordan wondered why no one had invented a better system for long-distance transportation. They're still using rockets, he mused. Probably not chemical rockets. They must have come up with something more efficient than that. But basically, this vehicle isn't that much different from the clipper ships we used before I left for New Earth. Well, maybe Mitch can adapt the energy screen technology for propulsion. Use dark energy instead of brute force rockets. He said he was looking into that. The display screen on the bulkhead of his private compartment lit up with the image of a smiling young woman in the airline's sky blue uniform, who said, "We are beginning our descent into Chicago's Banks Aerospaceport." She looked faintly Asian, although her eyes were sky blue. A mixture of different stock, he concluded. The whole human race was slowly blending. That's good. Then he remembered that almost everyone on Earth carried a percentage of Neanderthal genes. We've been blending for a long time, he realized. Jordan tuned her out of his attention. All she was really saying was that he should buckle the safety harness. As he did so, he recalled that he didn't know Thornberry's address, neither his home nor his place of business. I'll have to look him up in the local directory. To Jordan's surprise, however, Mitchell Thornberry was standing at the gate when he entered the terminal building. The Irish roboticist was wearing a neatly buttoned vest over a long-sleeved silver shirt and darker slacks. The vest's colors shifted as Thornberry moved through the arriving crowd toward him. The colors melded and swirled like an art display. A knowing grin split Thornberry's jowly face as he stuck out his hand. "Welcome back to Chicago, Jordan." "Mitch," said Jordan, clasping his friend's hand gratefully. "How did you know?" "Professor Rudaki called me. Said you were heading here, out of London. There's only 2 flights a day from London, and the next one's not due until evening, so I figured you'd be on this one." "You should be a detective," Jordan bantered. As they started ahead for the exit, Thornberry said, "Rudaki told me you've run into trouble with the head of the World Council." "I'm afraid I'm something of a fugitive, Mitch, and they've separated me from Aditi." Thornberry's face darkened. "They can't do that. They've done it. I don't know where she is or how she is." "Well, we'll see about that," Thornberry said as he shooed Jordan with one hand toward the crowded corridor that led out of the terminal. Janos Rudaki sat in his study, his eyes focused on the astronomical journal displayed on his wall screen, his ears listening to the heavy footfalls of the louts who were searching his home. His wife had fled to her room, unwilling to watch these strangers poking everywhere. The serving robots had been herded into the kitchen, where a trio of stern-looking security agents were going through their memory chips. Rudaki sat and waited for the security agents to finish. He knew how to deal with such intrusions. There was nothing for them to find, so let them look until they got tired. At last, the head of the security team, a muscular-looking man with short-cropped sandy hair and a trim, slightly darker beard, appeared at his doorway. "May I come in?" he asked in a deep, flat voice. Rudaki looked up from his reading. "You're asking permission?" "I am being polite, councilman." "Come in, then. Sit. Make yourself comfortable." The security agent stepped into the room but remained standing. "You found nothing," said Rudaki. "Nothing." With a shrug, Rudaki said, "I told you so. He was here last night. He slept in the guest suite. He left this morning quite early." "And went where?" "I don't know," Rudaki lied. "He hasn't used his credit account, so you have no idea of where he is. He can't get far without money." Rudaki hunched his shoulders again. Then he asked, "Tell me, just why are you searching for him? Is he under arrest or something?" "Something," said the agent. "What?" "You should discuss that with Chairwoman Halleck, sir." "I already have, while your people were thumping through my home. She says Kell is supposed to be under protective custody."
"That's my understanding."
"And his wife?"
"She's safe."
"Under protective custody?"
"Yes."
Rudaki took in a deep breath and pushed himself to his feet. He fretted about his phone call to Mitchell Thornberry in Chicago.
Sooner or later, the security forces would listen to it. With a mental shrug, he told himself, so be it. They can't arrest a council member for phoning someone. I hope. Well, he said to the security man, if you're finished here, then I suppose you should leave. I have a meeting with Halleck scheduled for later this afternoon. I'll be sure to tell her how thorough your team has been. If the security man caught the irony in the professor's voice, he gave no evidence of it.